Hello, I'm Simon Lambert, the editor of This Is Money, and this podcast is the second episode in the Making the Money Work series, sponsored by FSCS. On these shows, I join host Andy Peters and a fascinating range of guests with unconventional lives and finances to find out how they make their money work. The five episodes will be arriving in your usual This Is Money podcast feed over the coming weeks. We hope you enjoy listening to them and learning about some lives less ordinary. This week, we speak to former Olympic boxer Anthony Ogogo.
This podcast is brought to you in association with the Financial Services Compensation Scheme. Check your financial products are FSCS protected. Visit fscs.org.uk/thisismoney to find out more. Hello and welcome to Making the Money Work. I'm Andy Peters, and in this series, we'll be entering the fascinating financial worlds of high-profile people with unusual portfolio careers. That could be you, Anthony, actually. Anyway, most of us dream of ditching the 9-to-5 to finally write a novel, become an influencer, or swim the English Channel. I haven't dreamt of any of those. I just want to be a boxer. But one thing stops us, and that is, of course, money. We feel obliged to bring a monthly pay pack back home. After all, we've got pensions to plan for, bills to pay, and mouths to feed. I don't have any children yet, so I haven't got any mouths to feed, Simon.
I've got two children. They do definitely cost money, and I'm not sure I'd earn enough swimming across the channel to pay for them.
Simon is our top financial expert who knows everything about everything to do with money, and you've got your own podcast, This Is Money, haven't you?
We do have the This Is Money podcast, yes, where we tell you all the stuff you need to know about financial things every week.
So not everybody has a regular income. Simon, some people might get money some weeks, not others. Why is it important that when we have got our money and we have got our savings that they are protected by the FSCS?
Because if you work really hard and you spend all that time and effort saving up your money, you want to know that if something bad happens, like a bank goes bust, probably think that can't happen, but think back to the very recent history, 10 years ago, financial crisis, you want to know that it's protected. FSCS is the organisation, £1 to £85,000 in an individually licensed UK savings account with a UK bank, that's protected.
You're the man who knows everything about the FSCS.
They protect your money, and my money, and Anthony's money as well.
Oh, I haven't said who's here yet, but now you've spoiled the surprise. Let me tell you who's here. His name's Anthony Ogogo. Whoop, whoop. How are you, Anthony?
I'm great, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
It's all right. I've written some very complimentary words about you that I would like to read out from my very own hand.
And for my ego, I want you to say them. So,
okay, but to make you feel good. Okay, so I'm very pleased to introduce a man best known for his incredibly impressive boxing career. You?
Yes, me.
Okay, okay, just check it. Who, prior to going pro, competed in the 2012 Olympics. Is that you?
That's me.
Good. Whilst he bounced back from a vast array of different boxing injuries, including broken noses.
Yeah.
I mean, you've only got one nose. Is it that you've broken that nose several times?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
Achilles injuries.
Four operations on my Achilles.
Wow. A shoulder dislocation.
Three shoulder dislocations. A four. And they all happened during fights, and I had to carry on fighting with one arm. And the last time it happened, 2015, I literally had to put my arm back in my socket in between the rounds, using my knee, and wiggle it back in my socket. And that was an absolute nightmare.
That's something you only see in cartoons.
Cartoons and the life of me.
Oh, blimey. But your boxing career was eventually cut short when you fractured your eye socket during a fight in 2016.
Yeah, I mean, it's still devastating to hear and to...
Okay, I won't say it again.
No, honestly, I've got to learn to overcome it.
Okay, but I'll say it again. Whilst he fractured his eye socket during a fight in 2016.
Gets worse each time. Now, when you damage your eyes and your vision, that's something that's just irreparable, and you cannot get by in a fight with double vision or with impaired vision, which I had last time out, and I couldn't get it back. I had 9 surgeries on my eyes to get back in the boxing ring, and unfortunately it wasn't to be, so I had to call it quits earlier this year, which was very devastating. But that's life, you know, like, you gotta excuse the pun, roll the punches, and make the best of whatever the card you're dealt.
Simon, are you going to tell him it was an awful pun, or shall I? Do we just leave it because he's a professional?
I'm going to leave it. I'll just leave that one there.
Okay, fine. you've been registered as blind, but despite that, this year saw you joining the All Elite Wrestling to become a professional wrestler.
I was visually impaired. I couldn't see probably at all, hence the operations on my eyes to get them better. And the first things first was to get my eyes better to live, and then it was to kind of to live a nice, like, a decent life, and then it was to kind of get back in the boxing ring. And I wasn't able to get back in the boxing ring, but my eyes are now in this position where I can drive, I can read a book. But yeah, so I've just signed with AEW, which is a massive wrestling company, and I'm looking forward to kind of getting into the next chapter.
Well, Anthony, I feel enlightened already. This is a more formal welcome to Making the Money Work.
Thanks for having me.
Did you know, Anthony, that the money in your bank account right now, if it's £85,000 or less, is actually protected? So if your bank went bust, you'd get that money back.
No, yeah, I knew that. I've got a long way from 85 grand in
who
my account.
Who told you that? How did you know that?
I'll tell you that. So Carl Froch, former five-time world boxing champion.
Yep.
I was sparring with him one day and we were stretching off on the floor. And he said to me, don't know, talk about money. He went, do you know exactly what you said?
Really?
And I went, no, I didn't actually. And I was like, I'm not that interested really, like, because at the time I was 22, I was on £700 a month being an amateur boxer on the Great Britain team. I mean, he said to me, I was a long way from earning 80 grand.
That's a really sort of unsympathetic way to fire Simon from the show, because now we'll just get Carl Froch in. So Simon, thanks for your time. But there are people out there who know what you know and can be like heavyweight champion of the world. So quite frankly, not really necessary.
But to be honest, Andy,
shut the door on your way out.
I was impressed that you explained it yourself. Obviously, you.
Well, no. But you know,
you've listened to what I've said to you at some point.
It's the only fact I know about it, by the way. It's the only fact I know. But you mentioned you've been earning money from a very early age. Have you always been careful with money? Have you looked after your money?
Yeah. Do you know what? I come from a family. We didn't have a lot. Like, some would say poor. I like to say humble beginnings. My mum raised me up and my four sisters on her own. She worked full time. She's an incredible woman. And she just, I don't know how she did it. I have no clue how she did it, how she raised me and my four sisters all by herself. And we always had clothes on our back, always had dinner on our table. So, we didn't have a lot of money growing up. And that's why when I grew up and started earning money, I've always been quite sensible, because I've seen and lived what it's like to not have a lot of money. And I haven't got children yet, but when I do have children, I never wanted them to see me worrying. And when I was little, I used to see my mum crying and upset about not having a lot of money, and that used to break my heart. And I always say, like, put money away for rainy days. The last 3 years, I've had a lot of rainy days, and thankfully I've been sensible, because putting money away years ago, that's helped me kind of keep my head afloat when I've had really rainy days.
So, Simon, that must be a phrase you hear all the time. People put money away for a rainy day.
Yeah, and then people think, well, what on earth is that? And that's the money you need if the clutch goes on your car, if your boiler packs up, if you lose your job for some reason. Or
if you fracture your eye socket and need 9 surgeries, 4 of them in America, which are very, very expensive, that's that money.
That is a very, very, very rainy day. We've had some very rainy days over the last couple of months, but that is a very rainy day.
That's a very rainy day. Yeah. But saving money, again, everybody wants to do it. Is there an equation to save money? Is there you should put 10% of what you earn in an account for a rainy day, or do you just do it as in, well, I've got a spare 5, I'll put that in a bank account or put it in a shoebox under the bed?
Well, I think the best thing to do is to get that money out of your account as soon as you get paid. So to work out how much you think you can save. So you need to look at what do you actually have to spend every month? What are your essentials? So this is like budgeting, right? What are your essentials that you actually have to spend? Your rent or your mortgage, your energy bills, your council tax, the cost of keeping your car on the road, all those other things. Then you look at the food shop, for example, and then you allow yourself a bit of money as well on top of that for enjoying yourself. Because if you try and go too extreme on the budgeting, there are some people who do this. There's this whole financial independence movement where people try to basically get themselves into a point where they could, retire by 40 kind of thing, but whilst doing relatively normal paying jobs.
Right.
But most people can't do that kind of thing. So you need to leave yourself a bit of money to have some fun. And then when you get paid, if most people will be employed and they will have a regular income, you start getting that out as soon as you get paid. Or if you've got a lumpy income, for example, I mean, you don't necessarily have to be a boxer to have a lumpy income, but lots of people do have a lumpy income. You just get some money out at that point.
People often think sportsmen, you're so focused on what you do, but then sportsmen at the same time can earn a lot of money, and you need to know what to do with that money, because your career can be a very short career. When you think back to your childhood, was boxing the only sport you took part in, or were you doing lots of different sports and boxing is the one that you were kind of a punch above the rest? Sorry. Thanks.
The second one. I partook in every sport under the sun. So I knew from a young age I was going to... That was going to be my calling, so to speak. And then I began boxing at 12, and it just gave me something that the other sports didn't give me. And it was an individual sport. Like, quick story. Like when I played football to a good level. I played for Norwich City. I was captain of my county under 13s, 12, 13s and 14s. And one particular game, and that was actually my last game I actually took seriously. We were losing. I was captain of Suffolk, my county. We played Hertfordshire. And we were in Ipswich. We were 3-0 down. And then at half-time, the manager went mad at us, like shouting at us all. And me being a captain, he really shouted at me and had a white pop at me. And I thought, hang on, I'm actually playing quite well. And that's the rest of it. Like, we conceded, we went 1-0 down because Grant, the left-back, was twiddling with his little drawstring cords at a corner, and the geezer rose up and scored a header. I'm thinking, we're losing because of him. And the goalkeeper fluffed one and whatever. And I'm thinking, and he's shouting at me. And that really upset me because the night before, I boxed in Retford in the British Championships and became British champion. I felt like I was king of the world. Then a matter of hours later, I'm playing football and I'm getting shouted by the manager. It upset me because I was playing really well and we were losing because of other people. And then I just thought, when I was boxing, the night before I became British champion, like, I won. And it was down to me. Like, if the great thing about boxing, which I love, is win, lose and draw is down to you. Like, if you won, great, you put the work in. If you've lost, then you've got to go back and put the work in the gym to get better.
And when you decided that you'd go into boxing, you know, you look at motor car racers, they earn millions. You look at tennis players, they earn millions. Golfers, they earn millions. Boxing, at that level, doesn't have that sort of earnings.
Maybe I'm different to a lot of boxers, I don't know, but I was never doing it for the money. Like, I've always had a belief that if you're good enough, the money will come.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're good, whether it's football, whether it's banking, whether it's boxing, if you're good enough, the money will come. When you go through tough times in your career, boxer, football, or whatever, you need to remember the reason why you started in the first place. And no 12-year-old plays football because they want to become a millionaire. They play because they love playing football. Yeah.
When you started to go, right, boxing is my career, and you've got people around you helping to make boxing your career, do they start talking to you about, well, here's an earnings path? Yeah, you won't be earning much money now, but in the future you'll be getting more, in the future you'll be getting more? Or is it literally nobody ever really talks to you about that and gives you that kind of financial education?
Boxing is such an individual like sport. I put together a really good team around me. I've got some great agents. I had a great coach around me, great team around me. So they always supported me in that way. Like, you could be from a different place in the country and have your own team, and they may not be very privy to that because they've never really experienced that. But my team, I've got a couple of really wealthy guys in my team that have made their money in their careers, so they knew what they were doing. So from a young age, my agent put me in touch with his financial advisor to help me for the rainy day. And as you mentioned earlier, like, thankfully I had a rainy couple of years. So
when did you start to realise you were earning good money and would have to think more seriously about money, about securing your future, the future for your imaginary children that you haven't had yet?
So I went to the Olympic Games and I was on about £750 a month on that. But as I said, I mean, money was never my God. It's never been my God. I wanted to win a medal for Great Britain at the Olympic Games. And then when I won the medal, I would have automatically went up to top. I think I was like Class A funding, which was about £25,000 a year tax-free. So decent, though. Like, a small kid from a small town, you know, didn't have a pot to, you know, wee in, you know, they say. It was like massive. I had 1 month and then I turned professional. But a bit backstory about me. So at the Olympic Games, my mum had a brain aneurysm. She suffered a brain aneurysm just before the Olympic Games. She was fighting for her life for the whole Olympics. So for me, the Olympic Games were the worst time of my life. It was horrible. Like, just the pain, the emotional, it was horrible. It was a really, really bad time for me and my family. So I knew as soon as they were over, I was going to turn pro because I didn't want to kind of go through that. I couldn't go through that mental torture again. I couldn't wait 4 years to go to the Olympics again and feel all those feelings that I had, because I encapsulated my mum's illness with the Olympic Games. Yeah. They just kind of intertwined. So I knew I was going to turn pro. So I forewent my £25,000 a year tax-free. I turned pro straight away. I had about £3,500 in my bank at the time. And then I got a half-decent signing on fee to turn pro. And then I had my first year of boxing, I had about 5 or 6 fights, and then the injuries set in. So in answer to the question, Andy, it was like, so it would have been about 2012-13, that period of my life after the big games, and I was now becoming a professional. That was the time when I started thinking about, oh, this is more than just a passion now. This is a career, this is a job, this is how I'm going to afford a house and my car and the lifestyle that I want to have. So that was when I kind of really started taking it seriously.
And have you always been good with money? Are you the kind of person that, you've said how it's never been your driving force, but then living in London, living anywhere, you know, you've got to think about a house, you've got to think about a car, petrol costs money, food, etc. Have you always been mindful with your money?
I've never really been one for big, fresh material things. So I never really needed a great deal of stuff. Like, I drive quite a rubbishy car at the minute. I don't really care that much because it doesn't define me. Like, me and how I am and how I interact in the relationships that I have with people, that's what defines me, not, like, flash stuff.
Simon, does Anthony's philosophy sound quite refreshing for you?
Well, it does sound refreshing. I guess it sounds refreshing maybe to anybody listening who thinks that that's just not how professional sportsmen or sportswomen think. There is that stereotype, isn't there, of, you know, oh, well, firstly, if you're a professional sports person, you earn tons and tons of money. We see people, we see Premier League footballer wages, we see, you know, top boxers, we see that, we only ever see the people at the very, very top. And then you think, oh, well, and then when they do get their money, they just blow it all on fast cars and flashy houses and anything else they can spend it on.
Again, listen, I know there's plenty of boxers. They fight, earn loads of money, buy a flash motor, taxman comes a year later, oh, got no money, and they get in trouble. There's loads of them, like loads of them, like plethora. I think I'm one of the few that aren't like that, and that's just, like, it's just me.
You know, you've had such a varied career since you retired from boxing. You've done so many different things. Cash comes in, cash goes out. You've said that you live to live your life and you don't live to earn money necessarily, to have a flashy lifestyle. What brings you happiness in life?
So I've had, as you know, I've had quite a storied career, quite an ups and downs, topsy-turvy career in boxing. So I hurt my eye in 2016. Yep. I spent £100,000 on operations in America to try to fix my eye. I didn't earn that in 7 years. And thankfully, I was able to kind of get work on TV and other bits and pieces to keep my head afloat and keep the wolf from the door, you know. And I spent $100,000 on my eyes, as I said, and I remortgaged my house. I sold my car to pay for surgeries because my dream was to get back in the boxing ring. That's my dream. And I wasn't about the money. It was about what I love to do. And unfortunately, I wasn't able to do that. And so when I retired this year, I was proper skinned. But my head is still afloat. I haven't drowned when many others would have drowned because that $100,000 that I spent, I mean, I put away. I had that. That was in account and whatever. And I had to kind of keep drawing that back. Oh, I need another 10, need another 20, need another 30 for this operation. So all my money that I'd saved and worked hard for and saved in my career, it's now gone. One of the things prior to now, I didn't know when I was going to get paid next. And I've had so many injuries as a boxer. Like, I had such bad, rotten luck. Like, you could never have envisaged me having the injuries that I'd had. And because I wasn't able to box, I was getting a job doing your TV program or doing a speaking gig or motivational talk or whatever. I did a TV show last year, a Bear Grylls thing last year on Channel 4. And I got paid, like, decent money for that. And then it came in, I'm thinking, well, that's going to save me because I was a bit struggling before that. I don't know if it's going to last me 1 month, 6 months, 12 months. And it's lasted me 18 months because I haven't really worked the odd little speaking gig here and there, but nothing proper since then. So I've had to be very sensible to kind of make it stretch. So what I'm saying is, when I retired in March, I made a list on my phone, on my notes page, like what I want from the next chapter of my life. And for the first time, I wanted a job. Like, I wanted to know at the end of the month how much I'm going to get, because I've never had the luxury before.
Yeah.
And that's what I've now got with the wrestling. So for the first time ever, I've kind of got a real job, but it's not really that real. Like, throwing around big, muscled up, oily men, I suppose. It's not a conventional job, but to me, it's my first ever proper job.
And it is a job. And throughout that whole time with the boxing, with the eye, did you get a lot of support from the British Boxing Federation, from...
No, not really. Listen.
Oh, that wasn't the answer I was looking for?
Yeah, but no. Pray tell. It's a funny sport, boxing. It's a funny sport. It's amazing in so many aspects, but I call it like a dinosaur sport. It's really old and outdated in other aspects. And the only real correspondence I had from the British Boxing Board of Control, right? And they didn't know this, but they wrote me a letter because obviously I hurt my eye and I came out and said, my eye socket was fractured, and they wrote me a letter, and I got it on my birthday in 2017, saying that they've revoked my boxing license until further notice, until I could prove that my eye was okay. I was never able to prove that. So that was the only real correspondence I had with them in the 3 years of me trying to get back in the ring, that you haven't got a license anymore, you can't fight. So very little support, really.
Were you ever insured throughout your career?
I had a few injuries as an amateur, but no athlete, particularly in the combat sport. Like, nobody wants to think they're going to get injured because you think you're Superman. Like, you've got to go into the ring thinking you're bigger, stronger, badder than your opponent. So you'd never think about injuries, really. You never want to get one, but you know they're a potential to happen. But I asked to get insurance, like end of career insurance, when I first became a professional, and it was like something like 15 grand a month, something ridiculous, like, which I just could not afford because I'd had injuries as an amateur. I couldn't take it out.
Can you get insurance? Do those things exist for normal people, not just sportsmen?
Yeah, you will do, but it will be harder. And I mean, if you're a window cleaner, you'll be expected to have liability, public liability insurance, right, for example. You know, if you drop your ladder on someone's head or drop something on someone's head, but you might find it a lot harder to get yourself insured. And once you start moving into the realms of, as you say, a professional sportsman, you can normally get insured, but as Anthony said, you have to pay so much money that, and actually that's the worst bit, is because the people who are least likely to be able to pay the money are the people who are going to need it most if something bad goes wrong. Because if you're a prize fighter who's, you know, took home a couple of hundred grand from winning your last fight, it's going to be slightly less of an issue for you than if you're someone coming up as a young boxer who's earning £700 a month and is then being quoted £1,500 a month for the insurance.
You've had such a broad career. 2015 you did Strictly?
Yeah.
For somebody who was a professional boxer to go into Strictly Come Dancing, a lot of fun, but a nice little paycheck as well.
Yeah, if I'm honest, I didn't really want to do it. Not then. I think stuff like that, that's for now. That's when you're retired. That's when you're not in the gym each day. And I can hand on my heart say that I've done quite a lot of stuff outside of the world of boxing. And every single time I did something, it's because I was injured and I couldn't box. Like, all I ever wanted to do was fight. That's all I wanted to do. And when you're retired now, that's for doing all the fun, glitzy, glamour stuff. When you can't do your thing anymore because you had to give it up for too old or injuries or whatever. And I remember they asked me about a year before, and I was recovering from one of my Achilles surgeries, and they said, do you want to do it in September or whatever? And I said, no, I was recovering from my Achilles, and I was chomping a bit to get back boxing, and my return was set for July. I said, I want to box. I boxed in July, my first fight back after being out for a year. I threw a right hand, and I dislocated my shoulder, and I had to fight the whole fight with one arm. I won the fight. Had to put my own shoulder back in the socket on my own in between round two and three. And then I came home, did a big piece with the BBC, how I've boxed and been injured again, another prolonged period of time on the sidelines. And then Strictly saw that. They rang me up and said, now do you want to do it? Now you can't box. We've seen you can't box for like up to a year. Now do you want to do it? And I was like,
yeah, vultures.
I got to. I had no money. I had to. I hadn't boxed in a year. And I needed some money, so I did that purely for the money. And I had a bad shoulder. And listen, I'm not the best dancer in the world. However, had I not had a bad shoulder, I'd have got past week two. You know, I was better than Blumen, Jeremy Vine and Daniel O'Donnell, that's for sure. It was good fun, but it was a nice little payday. But the payday was to make up for what I wasn't earning in the ring. It was just to live, you know.
How much did they pay you? Let me guess. I'm going to reckon, was it more than 30, less than 50?
Bang on.
It's as if I work in television and I know these things. Right. You talked about how that all came about. So you never know who might be listening to this podcast. So I'll say a program and you say yes or no. And then if they're listening, they can get on it.
Well, if I do it, do you mean?
Yeah, if you do. So if they're listening and you go yes, then they phone you and say yes, then you another payday for you. Simon, you could redeem yourself here because I'll be leaving my contract negotiation for my commission to you. Stand by. I'm a celebrity. Get me out of here.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Celebrity Apprentice.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Celebrity Bake Off.
I can't bake.
Dancing on Ice.
Yeah, I'll do that. But I mean, again, what's their liability insurance? Just knowing me, I'd fall apart.
X Factor.
I can't sing.
RuPaul's Drag Race.
I don't know what that one is.
You do.
Drag Race in the car. You drive.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I can drive.
RuPaul's Drag Race. You're in a car and you drive. Yeah, that's right. When you Google this after, you're going to be like, I'm going to punch him. Luckily, I'll be on a train to Hull. You finish a career in boxing. What motivates you now?
This is a true story. So Saturday morning, England versus South Africa in Rugby World Cup final. Come on, England. Take something from Halifax. Look at that, a bit weird. Open it. You've got £23 in your bank. Make sure you get some more money for when your bills come out, whatever I said. Oh, you cheeky bugger. I don't want to know that. Totally ruined my Saturday. I don't want to know that. I want the lifestyle that I always wanted to have, always thought I'd have. Like, I'm sitting there now. I'm 30 years old. I haven't got the lifestyle I thought I'd have. So I want to get that. So to do that, I've got to be successful in this next chapter in my life. And secondly, I want my belt around my waist. Like, I want all the success I didn't get in my boxing ring, I now want to get that in wrestling. And it's very, very different, but a lot of things are very similar. I want to be the number one guy in my wrestling company. I want to stand on top of the belt, on top of the turnbuckle, with my arms in the air, with thousands of fans there cheering my name, with belts around my waist. I want to be successful, essentially. And yeah, so success drives me. That's what pushes me up. That's what wakes me up in the morning. That's why I'm in the gym countless times a day, every single day, lifting heavy weights, doing wrestling moves, because I want to be successful.
I have no doubt that you will. Just steer clear of accidents, for heaven's sake. Steer clear of accidents.
Yeah, no more surgeries for me.
No, it's been a pleasure to have you here. I say the same to you, Simon, as well. It's been a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks.
I know it's your last
Even
day.
Even if you are going to replace me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, literally as quick as I can. But Anthony, thank you for being so open and honest as well, because I think that will inspire other people that you can have a dream, and if one door closes, you just have to go and find another door and open that door, because you never know what's through that door.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Thank you so much. Honestly, thank you so much. You're a star. You're a genuine star.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Making the Money Work, brought to you by the Financial Services Compensation Scheme and This Is Money.